Today's episode is made possible by Nielsen. Sharpen your media planning with Nielsen's Upfronts, Newfronts guide. Whether it's linear TV or streaming, Nielsen helps you optimize reach and impact. Visit Nielsen.com for more information.
This is a potentially really big move that, especially because the real kind of big question floating over social media as a space is how kind of integral can it be in, you know, digital shopping journeys.
Hey gang, it's Monday, March 4th? Probably.
Doesn't sound right now.
You don't know. It could be. It's March 4th. Just don't check. Max Minder and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast made possible by Nielsen. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two folks. Let's meet them. We start with our senior analyst covering everything digital advertising and media based in Philadelphia. It's Max Willens.
Yo.
What's good? And he's also joined by one of our senior analysts who covers everything social media based one day in New York.
Yes.
In New York. If you could hold up a sign, I'd appreciate it. It's Minder Smiley. Oh, have I frozen?
Hi.
Oh, no, are there. What you said? You said nothing back. Nothing. No.
I got distracted by the thought of making a sign.
I thought I'd frozen.
No, you're good. You're good.
Minda's like, I'm not talking to you right now. You never remember, Marcus. It's fair. Today's fact. So some people have said that this podcast is the best thing since sliced bread. No one said that. But there is an article on history.com that explains where sliced bread came from. So there's evidence humans have been baking bread in some form for about 30,000 years. But sliced bread has only been around since the early 20th century. The first automatically sliced commercial loaves were produced on July 6th, 1928, in Chillicothe, Missouri, using the machine invented by Otto Rohwedder, an Iowa-born, Missouri-based jeweler. So in 1928, Rohwedder's power-driven multi-bladed bread slicer, sounds dangerous, was put into service at his friend Frank Bench's Chillicothe Baking Company. That's where it came from. I thought it was going to be more interesting than that. No offense, Otto. But yeah, we're always, it's the best thing since sliced bread. Wow, this amazing invention. And it's just like happened in the Midwest 100 years ago.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
I will say, if it hadn't come to be that way, I think I would only consume bread as, like, bread pudding.
Oh.
Because I find slicing it really tedious, but I love bread pudding.
It's hard to slice bread, too. Like, I feel like the first day when it's fresh, it's easy to slice, but then after that, it's just, like, I don't know, I find it very difficult to slice, so.
Yeah. All right, Otto, we've decided it is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You can stay.
Today's real topic, how social network ad spending is changing. In today's episode, first in the lead, we'll cover how ad spending on social media is changing. Then, for another news, we'll discuss where former X/Twitter advertisers are now spending those dollars and what might come from New York suing TikTok and Instagram over alleged addictive design. We start with the lead. So, social network ad spending, what does it look like? Things seem to be looking up for social network ad spending. At the start of last year, we expected US social network ad spending to hit $75 billion this year, 2024. That was our forecast. At the start of last year, we thought this year, ad spending, social networking, $75 billion. A few quarters later, though, towards the end of last year, we revised that figure up from 75 to 83. So an upward revision of $8 billion over the course of a few quarters. Next year, we bumped that up by $10 billion, even better. And Max, in your recent research on this topic, social network ad spending, you answered the question of what is behind the upswing in the social ad spending market. We're playing slice of pie. So, Max, what does your pie chart look like as to the reasons why ad spending, social network ad spending is on the upswing?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that are all sort of interrelated with one another. I think probably the most specific thing I could call out would be just this continued influx of spending from Chinese advertisers. So the amount of interest in major brand building, not just by, you know, big e-com players like Temu and Shein, but also lots of sort of smaller long tail advertisers, has indisputably boosted the fortunes of Meta, of Pinterest, and so on, to the point that this has become kind of like a running topic of conversation on their quarterly earnings conference calls. And the reason that they are all spending dovetails nicely with my second slice, which is just the overall advertising ecosystem's obsession with performance. You know, there's lots of need to spend on upper funnel initiatives like brand building and so on. But, you know, if you can put a dollar into a machine and get a $1.25 back, you're going to keep doing that over and over and over again. And advertising across lots of social platforms has really become quite efficient and quite effective. And people have kind of figured out how to put up with the fog that was initially dropped on this ecosystem by Apple when they implemented app tracking transparency a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And as people have figured that out, the spending has followed. And then a third kind of wild card, which I don't think I mentioned in my report, but which I think is worth kind of paying attention to, is just the sort of acceleration of cord cutting. So a lot of the money that, you know, was going into linear television and made linear television one of the biggest sources of ad spending is now starting to come out of linear television. And, you know, granted, a large, large chunk of that money is just going into CTV. So ads on Hulu, ads on Netflix, and so on and so forth. But the fact that it's now all of a sudden in the digital bucket means that a TikTok, which spent quite a lot of time trying to style itself as an entertainment platform rather than a pure play social media brand, is effectively boosting the fortunes, I guess you would say, of this channel in a way that is worth thinking about.
All right, let me take some shares quickly. You've got spending from Chinese advertisers, ad ecosystems, obsession with performance, and cord cutting acceleration.
Performance advertising and its focus gets the biggest slice.
Okay. 50? Yeah.
Sure. 55%.
55, generous. And then for the other two, equal-ish?
I would say the Chinese ad spending gets a bigger piece of it. I would reserve for cord cutting ad, let's call it 20%.
Okay. Perfect. So ad ecosystems, obsession with performance, 55%. Spending from Chinese advertisers, 25%. And then cord cutting acceleration, 20%. Minda, what would your pie chart look like?
Yes, mine looks quite different, actually, which should be interesting. So about a half my pie, 50%, I attributed to just, you know, a rosier economic outlook. I feel like at the start of last year, fears of a recession were stronger. We did see some marketers pull back. And I do think as the year went on and as we're seeing at the start of this year, some of those concerns kind of cooled off. It still does feel like we're kind of in a limbo regarding that. But I do think a big part of why we saw ad spend go up a bit is because just like people are just feeling better about the economy. So that was my big one. And then my second one, which I gave it 30% to, is AI. Of course, I think Meta probably is the biggest platform that we've really seen. And Max talks about this in his report. But, you know, we're really seeing Meta lean into AI and really talk about how those investments there are impacting advertising effectiveness and helping users stay on the platform longer. So I think Meta is kind of like maybe the poster child for that right now, but we're certainly seeing the other social platforms, even some of the smaller ones, invest there as well. And then the last one, I did say the same as Max, which is the influx of Chinese advertisers and that just providing another boost.
Okay.
So that's 20%.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 50% rosier economic outlook, 30% AI in particular Meta, and then 20% similar to what Max said with spending from Chinese advertisers. He gave it a little bit more, but you still had it as part of your pie chart. All right, folks. So that's overall. We're going to look at some specifics now, look at what's going on with the specific players. Max, you cover a ton of them in the report. We're not going to get to everyone, but we're going to try to get to a handful. We'll start with Instagram, and you're each going to give me the main thing to watch with these different social players in 2024. Max, the main thing to watch with Instagram in 2024 is what?
So I think the big piece is really just going to be what happens to Reels and whether they can continue building momentum around monetizing it. Meta finally kind of turned a corner with monetizing that format. They took pains to emphasize in the early stages that they were going to take their time with monetizing it. They weren't going to, you know, flood it with ads right away. But what's really going to be interesting to watch this year is just how much of a kind of major moneymaker it can be for them, because they still do get most of their money from feed ads, which is understandable because it's a much more established ad format and canvas, I guess, for advertisers. But just the extent to which they can really prove that this pivot into vertical video is going to pan out is the one I'm watching most closely.
Yeah, they were making way more from feed than I thought they were. I thought it shifted over more to stories, but that does seem to be the cash cow feed, at least for now. Minda, what's the main thing you're watching for Instagram?
I think one thing I'm going to be paying attention to is how they approach private messaging or DMs this year. One quote that kind of got tossed around quite a bit last year was when the head of Instagram, Adam Mosseri, said that if you look at how teens spend their time on Instagram, they spend more time in DMs than they do in stories, and they spend more time in stories than they do in feed. So we're clearly seeing, like, they have really identified that, you know, DMs are a big part of how these younger users are using the platform, but it's a tough space to monetize. So there are certain ways they've kind of done it, but not really directly. Like, you're not seeing ads in your DMs, but they have these click-to-message ads that you can kind of buy, and basically users can click out and talk to a brand if they want to by clicking on an ad.
Yeah, for me, Meta's growing reliance on Instagram over Facebook, I think, is fascinating. 52% of Meta's revenue coming from Facebook today, so 48% for Instagram. But next year, those shares are basically identical. And the year after that, you can see them flipping. So Instagram becomes the dominant source of revenue just for Meta over Facebook, which I think would be quite the tipping point. If Instagram was a standalone company, the fourth largest ad player, according to our forecast, behind only Google, Amazon, and Facebook for right now, but could overtake them in the next year or two. And despite its size, Instagram growing ad revenue 17% this year, which is remarkable. Let's talk about TikTok. We have to. Minda, for you, what's the main thing to watch for TikTok in 2024?
Yeah, this probably won't come as much of a surprise, but TikTok Shop is like the big thing I think we're all paying attention to. We're seeing some success depending on what you read, but a lot of users are frustrated by it. Sellers are frustrated by it. So yeah, it's still pretty new. I mean, it's only a few months in the US, but I think this year will be really pivotal to see like really how those capabilities play out.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's the extent to which they can make Shop feel less like an invasive species and more like a kind of native part of the ecosystem. It's really the big problem that they have, I think, is going to be convincing larger reputable brands to, you know, invest in it. Because right now, you know, everyone's experience of it is slightly different, but I feel frequently when I am hit with TikTok Shop ads, like I am being shown, you know, stuff I don't need that's suspiciously low price and whose quality just seems far from assured. And it just makes me kind of disengage from the whole process. Mm-hmm. And that's not a feeling I have occasionally. It's a feeling I have regularly.
So TikTok, they'll take one of every 10 social network ad dollars this year. But it was interesting looking through the numbers. It's going to be hard to unseat the giants. TikTok quite quickly grabbed a healthy slice of the social networking ad spending pie, going from no share before the pandemic to 8% in 2022. But then its share gains have been much harder to come by, going from that 8% in 2022 to 12% this year. So I thought that was quite interesting. Let's quickly talk about Pinterest before we close out the lead. Max, the main thing you're watching for Pinterest this year?
So I think the big thing is just how these partnerships that they've forged with Google and Amazon go. And I guess a sort of related matter is, can those succeed enough to drive more integrations, whether it's with a Walmart or an Instacart or a Shopify or someone else. This is a potentially really big move that, especially because the real kind of big question floating over social media as a space is how kind of integral can it be in, you know, digital shopping journeys? And I think Pinterest's partnerships with those two giant companies are, you know, potentially a big piece of helping us answer that question. So It's going to be interesting to watch those evolve over the next 12 months.
Minda?
Yeah, I said the same, just looking at their social commerce some ambitions and really just paying attention to, you know, to what extent they're actually successful with those this year. So,
Yeah, looking to continue the positive gains from last year. Two things jumped out. Net income, $200 million in Q4. That's way up from the 18 it made last Q4. Full year net dollars were down, though. And the second thing, global MAUs, nearly 500 million, setting a record. So, some positive gains there from Pinterest to carry forward. That's what we've got time for the lead. If you want to read the full report from Max, it's called Social Network Ad Spending and Trends Q4 2023. Robots, AI, and ad spending from China invigorate the markets. You can click the link in the show notes or head to insiderintelligence.com if you're a pro subscriber. We move, of course, to the second half of the show today in other news. Are small to medium-sized businesses ready to return to X, formerly Twitter? And what to make of a recent lawsuit from New York City against the social media giants? Story 1. SMBs are still cautious about advertising on X, formerly Twitter, despite lower CPMs. They're down 60% in the past 6 months, writes Trishla Ostwall of Adweek. She notes that X has been ramping up efforts to court small and mid-sized businesses to offset some of the ad revenue declines it has faced as brands have quit the platform. Our forecast ranks X as 17th in terms of US digital ad revenue in 2024, sandwiched between Instacart and IAC. 17th place means that they're making half as much as Snap and five times less from ads than Walmart. The question is, can Twitter claw back some digital advertising market share? Minda.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit, but I'm not really feeling super optimistic about their prospects, even as they kind of chase these smaller businesses. I think, you know, even when you consider the fact that maybe there is an audience there for some of them or the costs are lower, I just think the platform itself has had such a brand identity issue almost that I think people might be putting some dollars there, but I can't imagine it's anything super substantial just because of the platform's general chaos, yeah. I guess you could say. So,
Max.
Yeah, I think that Minda's onto something here about just how challenged they are from a brand safety perspective, which is, you know, a major reason why they're now courting SMBs. But, you know, small business owners don't have brand budgets. They have performance budgets. And, you know, pivoting from being a platform that is, you know, aiming at upper funnel advertising dollars to lower funnel advertising dollars is a costly time and resource intensive process. I mean, just look at the sort of wilderness that Snap has been in. You know, there's nowhere to go but up, but how high up they can go, I think I would not bet on it, you know, a significant rebound in this particular way.
Yeah, our forecasting team agrees with you. Some positive signs in Q4, SMBs on X grew almost 10%, according to X's head of business operations. But when you zoom out, X is still struggling. After ad spending was cut in half last year, ad spending revenue on the platform, we expect a further 2% drop this year, further 4% next year. Story 2. New York City recently announced a lawsuit against the social media giants Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, and YouTube, blaming their quote-unquote addictive and dangerous platforms for fueling a childhood mental health crisis that is disrupting learning and draining hospital resources, notes a recent article from British newspaper The Guardian. The suit says children and adolescents are especially susceptible to harm because their brains are not fully developed. In responses to the filing, the tech companies said they have and continue to develop and implement policies and controls emphasizing user safety. The Guardian piece points out that the legal action is the latest of numerous lawsuits filed by states, school districts, and others claiming social media firms exploit kids by designing addictive features. Max, what is the significance of this suit against social platforms?
I think it's the thing that you alluded to last, which is just that this is yet another example of, you know, public officials putting social media in its crosshairs and essentially saying, we do not like the effect that we perceive these technologies to be having on our kids. And this is not, you know, a kind of the results of a couple of shrill, hyper-vigilant or, you know, maybe overreactive people kind of seizing control of the legislative levers and pulling on them. So a bill that, you know, quickly made its way through Florida's legislature in late February, which would effectively bar people under the age of 16 in Florida from using social media, that passed in their House of Representatives by a vote of 108-7. So that's about as, you know, big of a slam dunk as you can have in attempting to craft legislation. So I am not super sure how this lawsuit is going to fare in the court system. But the fact is that we are, I think, maybe inching closer to something like a critical mass of scrutiny and suspicion of social media and the role it plays in minors' development.
Minda.
Yeah, I certainly had a similar reaction to Max. I mean, when I saw the lawsuit, you know, it's New York City, so of course that's a big one. But at the same time, we saw dozens of states file a very similar lawsuit in the fall. We've seen school districts sue. You know, there's nothing really super novel here. It's just kind of adding to the criticism of these platforms and the role they play in child safety and children's mental health. You know, one thing that I was thinking about was, we're obviously seeing the platforms respond in different ways. And I think recently we saw Snapchat come out with a pretty big campaign, really distancing itself from social media, saying, we're not social media, we're Snapchat. And they've kind of always had messaging a little bit like that, but this was like clearly a big investment to really push in that direction. So it'll be interesting to see this year how the platforms kind of react to these concerns and this issue.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting that they're kind of attacking this from a different angle than we're used to. Lauren Fainer of The Verge pointing out two things. One, saying a ruling by a federal judge late last year suggests these kinds of lawsuits may survive early challenges, saying that claims dealing with the defects of the platforms rather than speech could move forward and would not be considered in conflict with tech's legal liability shield known as Section 230. Whether those arguments hold up in court is a separate issue. And then two, these online safety suits may have some momentum after the kind of Senate hearings of last month, featuring several tech CEOs where there was Democrats and Republican lawmakers expressing similar anger towards the company's handling of child safety. So maybe there's a bit more momentum than normal. That's what we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Max.
Always a pleasure, Marcus. Thank you.
And to Minda.
Yes, thank you.
And thanks to Victoria, who edits the show, James, Stuart, and Sophie, the rest of the podcast crew. And thanks to everyone for listening in. We hope to see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Daily eMarketer podcast made possible by Nielsen.